15 minutes to 5 with Grant Edwards on Liberty NZ. And we've got the wonderful Dennis Hall in Wellington. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Good afternoon, Grant.
Nice to talk to you again. I hear you've been unwell, but you're on the mend.
Yes, I've been quite unwell, but I had the flu, would you believe, and it turned into all sorts of nasty things. And yes, I am on the mend, but I'm still patchy.
All right. Well, you sound better than you sounded yesterday, so that's good, isn't it?
Oh, good. Yeah.
Now, okay. What's happening in Hawke's Bay, Dennis? You just told me before we went on air that there was Mike Hosking gave a report this morning. Apparently, Maori gangs, what are they, Mongrel Mob or whatever, are they breaking into houses or robbing people at gunpoint and stealing stuff? What do you know exactly what's going on there?
Well, not well. They didn't mention gunpoint.
I've heard gunpoint.
Carry on. They've talked about gunpoint, but so Mike Hosking did an hour long discussion of what had been going on. It was basically looting the people have been taken away, you know, all the people have been asked to evacuate, right?
Yes.
And so they were in there in the night and looting all these houses. So they've turned, you know, in other countries they shoot people for looting, but because it's taking advantage of people at their worst possible moment, if you know what I mean.
It's like South Africa.
And so I heard.
It's Africa. Like South Africa. They love looting over there. They're into it.
Well. Oh yeah, it's shocking! Shocking! So what a horrible way for people to behave. But anyway, they apparently the police have got sort of put 110 extra people up there.
Yeah, is that enough?
And they arrested. I said it depends on whether they're going to stay for a week or a month or permanently.
Mm. Yeah.
But the stories that were told on Mike Hosking's show between 7 and 8 surprised me, because I knew there was a Mongrel Mob presence up there.
Yeah,
and man, Black Power didn't realise how big it was, and then he went on to Sport from 8 till 9, and then Kerry Woodham came on.
Yeah,
and she just started taking calls, and it unleashed a torrent of people with stories to tell about the Mongrel Mob and the Maori gangs in the Napier region. You know. And there's apparently a hell of a lot of them. Mm. And people were telling, so you know, they quickly sort of covered the business of the looting and what people thought about that. And then it sort of morphed into them, you know, different people telling stories about the Mongrel Mob. And, I mean, one story was that there was a concert of some sort being held there, and a guy had gone along with his wife and his mother.
What, during this whole thing where they're trying to find bodies?
Prior to all this.
Yeah, okay.
And when life was relatively normal.
Yeah.
And he said there would have been 60 or 70 Mongrel Mob people behind them in the crowd.
Yeah.
And he said it erupted into a bloody brawl and people were being stabbed.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And so he said, I saw two people stabbed.
Oh.
It's sort of out of control.
So, but where is the news? It's not on the news.
People recognize what's going on.
Like I'm looking at.
Well, it's for obvious reasons.
Why is it? Well, what's obvious?
It's because it's being covered up.
Well, yeah. Look, I think everything's been covered up right from the whole start.
Yeah, they can't cover it up on talkback radio.
No.
And the whole morning was taken up with people telling these stories, because the only opportunity they ever get, because the mainstream media will not report it.
No, they're sods. I mean, I heard a lady going on about how she'd been vaccine injured, and the lady said, oh, but how are you with that, everything else? You know, she just absolutely just ignored what the woman was talking about and tried to sway her onto something else about how she was coping with the hospital system. She said, no, I've been injured from the vaccine. Going on like this, and the woman just ignored it. That was one of those talkback people. I think it was one Wellington announcer. Yeah. Anyway, so that's not very good.
Oh, look, you know, I've just spent 2 days in Wellington Hospital, and the staff are bloody amazing. But they'll tell you what, the management of the place is out of control.
Really? Why do you say
that? I have no idea what they're doing.
Oh.
Oh well. just because of some of the things that happened to me that I, you know, I mean, I'm a bit obvious, I suppose, talk about it, but
I've taken you off subject. Let's get back to Hastings and Little Hawke's Bay and Napier and Taradale.
Yeah, Hastings thing's more important because it's sort
Sorry
of, you know, when you consider the numbers of these people in the society and that nothing's being done about it, and that, you know, Jacinda, what did she give them $2.5 million to the mongrel mob?
That was back
what's
then.
What's wrong with these people in government?
Yeah, they're giving them money. Well, I wonder whether they're actually a private army. I wonder whether they're a private army for the Marxists that are trying to take over the country.
Of course they're a private army.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, like George Soros.
Well, you know,
George Soros would go into a country and he would pay people like Antifa to go and attack people. And I wonder whether there's something like that going on in this country, you know, and I wonder if the mongrel mob are, you know, paid mercenaries. You know, because they've got all the guns, you know. They're the only ones with guns. You know, the gangs.
Look, Graham, I first came across the mongrel mob back in the 60s when I was driving cabs.
In Wellington.
And they're basically just a bloody gang. And you know, people might recruit them to do things from time to time. But, you know, they're certainly an organised gang. And in any other country, they would be outlawed. But, you know, not here.
No, they do. People get them to do stuff, don't they? They do actually employ gang members to, you know, break kneecaps and stuff like that when you step out of line. Yeah, it's shocking.
Well, you know, they supply meth. They supply meth, and Jacinda Ardern paid them $2.5 million to set up a thing to combat meth use. I mean, that's like paying... I can't get my head around the incredible stupidity of it. She's gone to the meth dealers, given them $2.5 million to help treat the people using meth.
Help get them off it.
Unbelievable.
they're probably just buying extra meth from the police.
It's unbelievable that our politicians can be that bloody stupid.
Oh, well, I don't think they're stupid. I don't think it's stupid. I think they're following a plan to destroy our country. I really do. I think it's a globalist Marxist plan, or globalist communist, or whatever you call it, to destroy the country so they can build back better. This is what they're talking about: build back better. But they've got to rip it apart.
Build back better.
Yes, that's what they're crowing about. As soon as COVID struck 3 years ago, they were going with to build back better. You know, that Klaus Schwab from WEF, and all the leaders were saying build back better. Biden was saying it. Ardern was saying it. They're all saying the same thing. So obviously they're getting their script from some foreign power, and that's the thing. They've got to build back better. But to build back better, you've got to break something that you've got to destroy something first. And I think they desperately, all over the world, these Western leaders, these communists are destroying, communist globalists, destroying our economy, destroying everything. I mean, the elephant in the room with the doctors and the nurses, the shortage in the hospitals, there's no New Zealand nurses, and they're lying when they say to you they've all gone to Australia. That's not, because they've got the same problem in America. Where did they go in America? No, they were mandated out of a job, and it's exactly the same in New Zealand.
Well, let me tell you my exact experience of that in the last sort of 2 days.
Okay.
Right?
Well, should we go back to Hawke's Bay and then we'll segue into the hospital, or do you want to go straight to the hospital thing with your experience first and then come back to Hawke's Bay?
I think the Hawke's Bay thing is the Hawke's Bay thing is what it is. You know, there was out of control looting, which is a sort of thing you'd expect to find in a war. The people who were doing it were Maori gangs and predominantly the mongrel mob. They are there in numbers and the police can't stop them. And so that's a piece of news that we'll probably miss out being on TV One News tonight, but I'm going to watch to see.
They said they brought in 140.
So the other thing is that,
sorry to interrupt. They said they brought in an extra 140 police officers to help with it. They're playing everything down, aren't they? The whole thing has been played down.
So why did they... But, you know, they did that too late.
Yeah,
and you know, if you know, but why would they? Why would the police expect there to be a wave of looting in New Zealand? Why would you expect looting in New Zealand? I mean, what have we turned into?
Oh,
and so then
we've never done that
for
before.
That to then unleash, and then that unleashes 3 hours, and I never listened after 12 o'clock. God knows what happened then.
Yeah,
but 3 hours of stories about the mongrel mob and the black power and their. What they're doing,
and how wonderful they are,
and so And, well, no, nobody said how wonderful they are, but I've heard the government say that. But some people rang up and talked about how come it is that they've set up these sort of things where they're looking after children and all this sort of stuff. You know, it's just nonsense. You know, what the government are doing with all this, the way they're treating it, it's as though they can actually be all holistic about it or whatever and do something about it. It doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. So, but let me just jump back to the hospital.
Yeah.
I was in hospital.
Wellington
for two
Hospital.
Because of. Okay.
Yeah.
And on the last night I was there, I was looking at the way the place was staffed, apart from anything else, and apart from a lot of maintenance that hadn't been carried out, and, you know, so the place is looking pretty baggy. But, you know, I got looked after, and I got looked after well, and they put me back on my feet and got me out the door.
Yeah.
But on the last night I was there, I looked at all of the nurses in our ward. There were 21 of them, and every single one of them was a Filipina.
Oh.
Now, I got nothing against Filipinas because they looked after me and they did a fine job, and most of them are lovely ladies and very attentive and with plenty of empathy. That's what they're like.
Yes.
But nevertheless, they are not New Zealanders because New Zealanders aren't doing it. Where have they gone? So, and then on the other days when there weren't enough Filipinas to go around, they had 3 or 4 or 5 out of sort of 20 or 30 nurses who were old. Older.
Experienced.
As in...
Veteran nurses.
You know, formerly sectioned.
Yes.
Just old ladies, old grey-haired ladies. Lovely. Just lovely, lovely people.
Come back into the workforce.
Any of the bloody nurses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they've... And I said to one of them, what are you doing here? You know, what are you doing here? And she said, oh, when the kids left the home, I decided to come back in, you know.
Right.
And so they're supplementing all these Filipinas. So there's something wrong in the health system when, you know, I mean, the health system's going to be taken over by Maori, or a big chunk of it. And so done all Maori signers around the place.
Mm.
I only met one Maori staff member while I was there.
Oh, it's full of Maoris. There's doctors and nurses. They're a lot of doctors and nurses are Maoris. Didn't you see them?
I never saw one. Not one. Not one. The only Maori person that I had any interaction with in the hospital was on the day when they, because I couldn't walk to the door. They put me in a wheelchair, take me to the door, and the girl who took me was a lovely young Maori girl. And she was very empathetic and very helpful, you know, she was lovely.
Yeah.
But she was the only one there. All of the rest of them were
Filipinos.
Old white ladies and Filipinas.
Right.
Her.
Retired women come back into the workforce.
So you've got to ask. So do I believe that they're training New Zealand nurses? I don't. I mean, I think the whole thing has become something that New Zealand women don't want a thing to do with. You know, and why would they? They don't get paid as much as the Aussies do.
No.
You know, I don't get it. You know, why are they taking a health system and deciding to divide it in half? But, you know, I asked some of these people, is the Maori health system going to build new buildings? And who's going to pay for it?
Well, we do, don't we?
It's
we
insane.
Pay. The workers.
Well, yeah, but that's not what will really happen. What will really happen is they'll be coming into the health system we've already got and disrupting it. And I'm talking about disrupting it on a sort of an official basis to say, oh, no, you know, Pākehās can't get treated today because today's Maori Day. You know, something like that's going to happen. It's insane that New Zealanders do not have the courage or the fortitude or the integrity to actually stand up and do something about it.
Well, we need some good-thinking Maoris to stand up. People like Brian Tamaki, he was the only one brave enough to stand up and call a spade on the 6th of February. Those are the sorts of people we need. We need Maori to stand up because then they can't call them racist. So we actually need Maori to come into bat for us.
Well, you see that's the... But that's the big cop-out clause. Any criticism at all is racist.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
I know,
I mean,
we're stupid.
We're
mentally ill. We're bat crazy here in this country. We're the laughing stock of the world, really.
Bat shit crazy.
Yeah. We are crazy. We're just nuts. Yeah, and, you know, what about old Malloy? He's in the news. Old the guy that was trying to be mayor, what's his name? This guy here, Leo Malloy. He's in trouble. Kate Hawkesby was interviewing, apparently, I haven't heard it, but apparently he was in trouble for downplaying the storm. I downplayed the storm because we didn't get it that bad up here. I mean, it was blowing like a gale, that's for sure. But the average wind for most of the time was only about 30 knots, gusting 50. We get plenty of that. Mm. We got a big lot of rain. We got some wild kind of like gusts that were really quite damaging, but nothing like what they got down in Hawke's Bay.
Oh, look, it was all about the rain rather than the wind. Because, you know, I've got friends who live on the hill in Napier, and they've come through it quite well, but that was because it was mostly rain.
Mm.
They just couldn't cope with the amount of water. And so then you've got to ask yourself why. You know, what are they doing that allows the place to flood? I mean, for the whole of that region out by the coast to be underwater is astonishing.
It is. It is astonishing.
Someone's not doing their bloody job properly.
Well, I don't know. Apparently a riverbank broke, you know. But, you know, and the other thing Go ahead, Dennis.
Somebody with a theodolite and a big white stick with numbers on it should be able to figure out the lay of the land and tell them where all the bloody water's going.
Well,
likely to go.
One of the other problems.
How come it all got like that?
Well, one of the other problems. It was more than it was water, all right. But one of the other problems was the logging. And apparently, when they finished, they just leave all this debris lying around. And it was all this massive amount of dead trees and broken branches and stuff like that from the logging that was just left there, and that went sliding down the rivers and streams and broke bridges, broke a lot of bridges, just smashed into them. You know?
Yeah, so we, you know, people in the National Party need to get standing up and saying, right, we know who did this, the forestry companies did this, let's see your bank account, because you guys are going to have to pay to fix it up. You know, they need to come down hard on these people. I mean, that slash has done a huge amount of damage. There's so much of it that it's taken out bloody bridges. So they've got to replace bridges because of the slash. And so who should be paying for that? The forestry companies.
Yeah, they should.
And then the
but
other
they won't.
Thing is that they're like,
they'll just go bankrupt and leave the country.
And the other problem is the roads. Yep, well, really, they will take their money with them.
Yeah.
And stay away, hopefully. And so the other thing is all the roads are being destroyed by the logging trucks, and we have to pay for the friggin' roads.
Yeah,
well,
all that stuff.
Where does the money go? You know,
it should all go by ship and rail. It shouldn't be allowed. A lot of that stuff shouldn't be allowed on the roads.
But it's got to go on the roads to get down to the wharf.
Yeah, it used to go by rail.
The
rail used to go straight into the wharf and load them straight on.
But look, I got relatives involved in the business of shipping logs overseas. Mm. They put them, it all goes on trains down to Wellington and down to the port. It's big piles of it in Wellington all the time. And it goes on an available ship. And so, you know, that's how it travels within New Zealand. But when it's coming down from up in the hills, it's coming down in logging trucks to meet the rail.
Yeah, but it should come down and go straight onto a rail.
Those roads.
Winston Peters has organised for a whole new rail system from the port, Marsden Port, all the way up north. And that's good. That's happening now. They're replacing all the old sleepers with the new concrete ones, so that's good. So what will happen is the logging trucks, they'll come down on their logging roads straight down to the railway. They'll be loaded onto railway carriages and then carted off to the port. But they shouldn't go off to the port. They should go to a mill and should be turned into proper wood and then sold, not just selling logs. We shouldn't be just exporting logs without adding value to them. That's another stupid thing.
Well, it's shiploads and shiploads. But I've seen
shitloads.
Great big beach.
We won't have any of that talk on this radio.
Driving in Wellington, yeah.
No swearing on the podcast, please. Shiploads.
We always leave things until it's too late.
No, I know.
Until it's a complete mess up. And we've left the merry gangs to do what they want until now, and they've just showed their absolute true colours. And they have launched an attack. I consider it a terrorist attack.
What, the gangs?
The city of Napier.
Yeah, well, then they should send in the armed defenders.
Yep.
They should send them in.
The people were saying, why aren't there cops there with guns? I mean, people were telling. There's one story they told about some roadworks people, and they wanted to steal their stuff, and they just presented a pistol and a sawn-off shotgun and took all the stuff.
Well, you know something?
I'm talking about the stuff at the road.
Here's the problem. There's not enough police. They can't do it. They need to arm the citizens. Every citizen should be armed. Good people should be armed, sane and good people, and then you'd never have any of that nonsense. They'd never try that rubbish because they'd just get their head blown off by a farmer or a hunter or something.
It's too hard to identify the people who are going to be responsible with guns.
No, it's not. Everyone's responsible. There's very few mentally ill. The only real mentally ill people, the ones that go to the blooming doctor and they put them on Prozac and stuff like that, it makes them crazy. Every single mass murderer in America, the guy was on pharmaceutical psychiatric drugs. That's the problem. It's a mental health issue. It's not a gun issue. Every New Zealander should be armed and trained to defend himself and his family. That's common law.
All you can own now is a .22.
No, if you're a Protestant, you're allowed to be fully armed. The Bill of Rights, 1688, it's still in force today. Yes. Read the bill. Go to legislation. Legislation is it? .gov.nz. Go there and read it.
Owning a pistol is illegal in New Zealand.
Not according to the Bill of Rights.
Owning a pistol is illegal. Even owning a 22 is illegal in New Zealand without a permit.
Without a permit, but you shouldn't. You don't need to be permitted. You don't need to be licensed. You don't need to be permitted. You already have the rights under the 1688 Bill of Rights, which is part of New Zealand constitutional law. And the lawyers are just all asleep about this.
But Grant, be serious. That's a political issue.
I am being serious. I'm going to take a court case.
The reality is that you.
Hey? I'm going to do a court case.
You've got to have money to do that.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to actually do this myself. I'm going to take the Minister of Police. I'm going to take the, who's the guy now? The Attorney General to court and say that, and the Minister of Police, what's his name? Stuart Nash and Costa. They are illegally arming Roman Catholics. They've given them license to have guns and it's against the Bill of Rights. I'll start with the Catholics. Highly illegal.
Yeah,
fancy
see, a Roman Catholic bishop just got shot, so...
Really? Oh, dear. No Catholic
yeah,
should
Roman Catholic bishop in Australia, I think. Somebody walked in his house and shot him.
No, but seriously, all New Zealanders, all sane, responsible New Zealanders, every New Zealander should have the right to bear arms for self-defence. And then you wouldn't have any of this trouble like they're having in Hawke's Bay. That's the problem. You know, if you said to the arms officer, look, he'll ask you, what do you want a gun for? Oh, I want to shoot rabbits. Oh, that's good. If you said, oh, just for self-defense in case someone breaks in and, you know, tries to kill me. Oh, no, we can't. They won't give you a license.
Of course not. So, as you've just said, you've got to have a license.
Yeah, but they won't give you a license. But do you think that that's right for New Zealanders to be disarmed? Do you think that's right that you can't defend your family and property?
When I was living in the Wop Wops, I had two .22s and a double barrel shotgun.
Yes.
I used to sleep with a shotgun under my bed because I was isolated, and the shotgun had two shells up the
ready to go
spout. The shotgun was broken. You know, kept it.
I know.
I kept it open, right?
Yep.
But I knew that if I had a problem, I lived in a very big bedroom, I could put one arm under the bed, grab the hasp of the rifle and give him the shotgun, twist my wrist and it would close it and load it.
I know a fellow.
So I was always worried about hitting it with a vacuum cleaner. That's why it was never locked and loaded, you know?
No, well, it's good having your gun.
But, you know, I did live in the boondocks.
Right. Well, if you're out in the country, it's no good having your gun, with the bullets in one place and then your rifles or whatever it is on the other side. You've got to have them ready to go. Someone tries to break. Look, if they come in and rob you at night, if they're coming into your house at night, they're coming to get you. If they break into your house when you're away during the day, they're coming to get your stuff. That's a different matter. But when someone comes into your house at night, they're there for you. They're there to do you harm.
Grant, the place where I lived was a 36-room mansion, mate. Two-story, great big, huge, white mansion.
Yes.
And quite often I'd be in there alone. But what I used to do is I used to tell the locals that it was haunted.
That's a good idea.
And that sort of kept a certain amount of people away.
The Maoris are superstitious. They don't like anything like that. Yeah. Anyway, the only time you ever had a fight in that place was when four Maoris got round you, didn't they? And beat you up.
Oh, well, Right, I've told you about it. The whole pub came in.
Yeah, oh, no, oh, no.
So, you know,
which pub was that? The Takapau pub. Or the Onga pub.
I didn't want to say that, but yep.
Yeah.
No, oh, dear.
Hey, look, just getting back to Hawke's Bay, it says here, the latest news is from Stuff. They are Stuff, don't they? Live, 6,500 people still can't be reached. The government has announced $250 million for roads and only $2 million for to help people rebuild. $2 million they announced, remember?
Only $2 million.
Only
that's
$2 million.
Ludicrous.
That's what they said. Yeah, wouldn't even cover one person. Wouldn't even cover one.
The government are mad people.
Yeah, they're insane.
Some people think they're possessed.
They're
completely impractical.
Yeah, that's right. So this is what they've announced. They've announced $250 million for roads, $50 million for business. Now, does it say, it says here, workers in primary sector as a national state of emergency is extended for a week. Okay, but they haven't said where that money's going. I bet you that won't go back into Hawke's Bay because I think they want to depopulate Hawke's Bay. I think that's what the globalists want to do. They don't want you, because they've been saying it now. Well, it's caused by global... They're saying it's caused by global warming.
That's a very big segue, man.
But that's what they're saying. They're saying it's climate change has caused this, and so there are some areas, this is what politicians have said, some areas shouldn't be repopulated.
You know, a lot of people up there think that was geoengineered, that bloody cyclone.
I'm one of them.
But, you know, cyclones are natural occurring things.
I realise that, but ones like this, they can do it. They've had the ability to do this for 70 years. Why couldn't they have got in a week? They knew it was coming here a week before. Why didn't they get in and push it away? They've done that before. They've been working on this for a long, long time.
No, Grant.
What?
They've been doing cloud seeding and whatever in the United States easily for 70 years, and that's to cause rain, right? And so there is a certain amount of geoengineering that they can do, but it does involve going up in a big airplane and seeding.
No,
and load up with a whole lot of chemicals.
They use this thing called HAARP, which puts out incredible sound waves. Like, it's like millions of watts, billions of watts, and it's very and it causes earthquakes. Did you notice there was an earthquake in Hawke's Bay, and there was one in Gisborne as well at the time of the storm? So I think that's what they do. They give the old.
No, but there was one here. There was one here where we are,
yes.
Out to sea from here.
Yeah, out off Cabot.
About a week before.
Yeah. So I think they do that to loosen up the place the landslides happen. That's just my humble opinion.
No.
Oh, yeah, we're in full frontal attack.
If you saturate the ground enough.
The globalists are attacking us. They're trying to kill us. Let's just be honest. Let's be honest. 12 past 5. 12 past 5. Grant Edwards on Liberty NZ with Dennis Hall from Wellington. Dennis is a sane one. crazy cop. And good cop. Dennis is a good cop.
I'm the sane one.
Yeah. Dennis is the sane man, and I'm the insane one. Yeah. Anyway, so...
I'm still alive.
You're still alive, yeah. So that's good. They're going to do $50 billion.
I'm still alive thanks to a very dysfunctional health system.
Well, only because you got a doctor that was good. That cardiologist kept you alive, didn't he?
No, I've got to give credit to the people in that ward. I was in the COVID ward. That's where they put me.
Yeah, well, you didn't.
They put me in a hermetically sealed room in the COVID ward.
You don't need to worry because it's no such thing as a COVID virus anyway. It's all rubbish. It's all bumpkin. $50 million for roads.
That's what they said it was.
Yeah, $50 billion for road business, so, Dennis. $50 billion they're going to put into, but they don't say where.
$50 billion.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, David, good. And I can't believe all the shit that's going on.
I know. It's just
astonishing.
Yeah.
Absolutely astonishing.
Look at this bird
TV,
here.
TV.
Let me show you something. Look at this bird. You listen to her. She starts off with a whole bunch of Maori. Look, listen to her opening.
Te Kato Katoa, call Jeanette Pakaho, Eastern District Police Commander. Look, it's
too low. Why is it too low?
Initially, what I really want to...
I can't hear it. Listen to this. She starts off with all the stuff that 99.9% of the country can't understand. Listen to this.
To Te Kato Katoa, call Jeanette
Parker Ho. Te Te Kato Koko, Jeanette Parker Ho. Jeanette Parker Aho. Oh, mate. Oh, it's just nuts, eh? It's just nuts. We just live in a stupid country. We're actually, our country is a mental asylum, and it's run by the inmates. You still with me, Dennis?
Yeah, I think that's
or
right.
I lost you.
Mm. I'm 81 now, but I tell you what, if I was 71, I'd be leaving town.
Go to America.
Or Australia.
Yeah.
Or the States.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've lived in the States. Yeah. Way better than here.
Yeah, that's the place to go.
A million times better than New Zealand.
Yeah.
But I couldn't believe that I was so stupid enough to come back.
Oh, really?
But anyway, I was. It's just a dumbass thing to do.
Hmm.
For me to come back to New Zealand.
Well, you went to America, didn't you?
Because, you know, I'm a sculptor, for God's sake. I could have made a lot of money in America.
I'm saying.
You can't make any money out of art in New Zealand. It's just a joke.
Well, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I think it was Brief History, and this guy, they were saying that the guy, who's the guy that did the Mona Lisa? Anyway, he had to be careful what country he went to because there were other famous ones there. He had to go there and be like the kingpin. So you have to really strategically make sure you go to the right place, the right city, in the right country if you're going to be an artist. It's certainly not going to be Wellington or Auckland, is it, in New Zealand, if you want to be a famous artist. Not really, not until you're dead. I guarantee
you. If you'd asked me a couple of years ago who did the Mona Lisa, I would instantly answer. But my poor old memory doesn't work like that anymore.
I can't remember either. Yeah, I can't remember either. Mona Lisa.
Leonardo da Vinci, was it?
No, he did the Sistine Chapel. He had a lot of help, with that, didn't he? I don't think he did the Mona Lisa.
No. Michelangelo did the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. Michelangelo. Yeah, that's right. Michelangelo did the Sistine Chapel. Oh, it could have been Leonardo da Vinci. I thought Leonardo da Vinci
got all the way from Cyclone Boa.
Like a scientist or something. Oh, I don't know. Oh, I get confused. I'm a victim of the New Zealand education system. Born in 1960, and it's just gone downhill from then. I think the education system was probably quite good in the 1930s and 40s, maybe the 50s and 60s, but it just went downhill from about 1985, just like downhill, crash.
Pretty crappy.
Yeah, pretty crappy.
It's become social. The education system is now social engineering, but nothing to do with education.
Yeah, they're brainwashing kids, aren't they? Yeah. I'm just going to zip over to your Facebook page. Are we allowed to talk about things that you've put on your Facebook page?
I haven't put anything on it in recent times.
You have? I'll tell you what you put on.
I have?
Yeah. Dennis Hall says you're my friend. All right. So the last thing you did was recriminations are already beginning in the wake of the cyclone. They've been spending all the money in the wrong places. What made you say that, Dennis? What made you... what gave you that idea?
The first thing they've done where they're spending the money in the wrong places is, or not spending it, and that's the slash. I mean, they've known for a while what was causing part of that problem.
Yeah.
That slash was what did a lot of the damage. But, you know, the other thing is that they need to be prepared for this sort of thing. But at the same time, and things like roads and whatever, they're not doing them properly either.
Mm.
And you know, some of them would have probably been washed out, the ones that they have done. The difference that a decent road makes out of Wellington, for example, coming up to Levin, from where I'll be leaving in another 8 days.
Right.
The road there that's got as far as Otaki,
mm-hmm.
to the absolute difference, it's not dangerous, it's easy to drive, it's straightforward, and it would be relatively easy to repair as well. But they still have to go back and repair it like a month after they've just put it down. So I don't know how that happens.
Mm.
But at the same time, from Otaki to Levin, which takes a hell of a lot of traffic, is absolute crap. It's a shocking road. They should be ashamed of themselves. Absolutely ashamed of themselves. By now, in the 2023s, they should have a four-lane highway all the way from the capital city to the main city. All the way. They should stop pissing about.
Yes,
What are they doing with money? They're spending money on stupid things. And they're propagating, spending vast amounts of money pushing Maori culture. And so they're trying to reintroduce people to the white man's version of Mary Coulter. I mean, it's astonishing stuff. I think it is. It's just, you know, they left it behind for a reason. They left it behind for a reason because it didn't serve them well. And so to sort of try and manipulate them back into it and put a romantic spin on it, it's all wrong. The Maoris made their own choices back in the day when around, you know, prior to the Treaty of Waitangi, I don't know whether you know about the William Yeate letter, but this William Yeate was approached by 13 Maori chiefs and asked to write to the king and organise the bloody Treaty of Waitangi, and that happened in 1837, right at the end of the musket wars, at which time Maoris had killed off 20% of their own population with muskets, right? And so, you know, we've got all this wrong, and it's because we do bullshit all the time.
Yeah.
New Zealand does bullshit all the time. Until you look at the actual history and see what really happened, because 500 Maori chiefs signed the fucking Treaty of Waitangi. Why did they do that? They did that because they could see the future. They weren't stupid. They could take one look at all these people wandering around with clothes and technology and all the rest of it, and being able to saw timber and all the rest of it, and thought, we want to be there.
Yeah, we want the civilization. We love it. That's what they're saying. They had more brains than they do than today's Maori. Today's Maori are backward, but the prominent Maori in the 1870s were brilliant people, bright.
But with respect, Grant, today's Maori and today's Europeans as well
are
completely infected with ideology.
We're nuts. We're crazy. We're talking to Dennis Hall. It's 26 minutes past five with Dennis Hall. Dennis Hall writes for New Zealand Centre for Political Research. And I heard Leighton Smith the other day crow about you, Dennis. Well, not crow, giving you accolades. Said you one of the best writers. He loves reading your stuff. He said he thinks you've got the you're really punchy. He actually couldn't read all your stuff out on air because it was edited. They edited it. Yeah, I think he did read the whole thing out, but News Talk or whatever it was, they would have edited it all. But he got a bit out.
Oh, well,
anyway.
No, he doesn't do. You know, he only does podcasts now.
I know, but they're still sponsored by News Talk ZB. It's a News Talk ZB podcast. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's really nice that he's done that. He should ring me up. I'd love to have a chat with him. I used to like listening to him.
Very good. Yeah, well, I think he likes reading your stories. So I've got a picture of Dennis up there, so they know, so the Maoris know what you look like, so they can come and get you down in Wellington.
Jesus.
Yeah. Anyway, I better take it off very quickly. So Dennis Hall is former proprietor of Orawa Homestead in Hawke's Bay, and he's also a balloonist, an accomplished balloonist, and had many balloon festivals here in New Zealand. He's also a very good sculptor and amazing taxi driver. Oh, tell us about the one where you had to tip that drunk fellow out, the guy that tried to grab you around the neck while you were going down the road, and you managed to flip him out of the back door of the car onto the road.
Good.
That was a good one.
Your memory. Thing that you could do. This character grabbed hold of me, and he was leaning forward, and he was digging his fingers in my shoulder by my throat.
Oh, nice.
And I just started zigzagging as I was going down Adelaide Road, big wide road, and he was banging against the door, then he'd go back the other way, and then he'd come back and bang against the door.
Right.
And I pushed my hand down between the seats and flicked the door open.
Oh.
And the next time he hit it, he went straight out.
Got rid of him.
But he was going to, you know, I mean, I couldn't stop. If I'd have stopped, I'd have been in big trouble because there were five of them.
Yes.
So, you know.
My dad
but
said
once
that.
Once he'd gone for Burton, the other ones didn't want to play games anymore. They were happy to get out.
They knew you played for keeps. Hey, my dad said that, speaking about running people over or, you know, turfing them out, my dad said that during the war in Italy, if you ran over, well, I don't think he did it, I'm sure my dad was too nice for this, he drove an ambulance, but that they'd say that if you ran over one of the locals, make sure you go back and ride them over properly because otherwise they get into trouble. So you've got to get rid of the evidence. That's terrible.
Oh, look,
go ahead.
Yeah, I did hear that from my father and particularly one of my uncles who was in Italy.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said that if you just injured them, the army had to pay for them for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, you had to kill them.
So they said if you run someone over, go back and back over and kill them.
Yeah. My uncle Wolf.
I reckon that was just folklore.
I think so too. Just a story for the kids. My uncle Wolf told us that he was he was in the infantry, and he said that this little itai, or they call them itais, tried to climb over the back of the truck, and one of the soldiers got a shovel, and he had both his hands over the trying to climb in, and the guy just went down with the shovel, and the fingers fell inside the truck, and the fellow rolled around on the ground. Terrible story, isn't it? Fancy doing that to a poor little 12-year-old kid that's just hungry, just wants to get a lift to the next town. They were pretty tough, weren't they?
Or a feed, yeah.
Those 1940s soldiers, they were tough, man. Man, they were tough. My Uncle Wolf got blown up in a house.
Well, the ones who were over in Italy were pretty weird. Yeah, one of my uncles, my mother's brother, whose name was Dennis, so I was named for him,
yeah.
He was at Monte Cassino.
Oh,
and,
right.
And he came, Monte Cassino, the Battle of Monte Cassino.
Yes, he would have been in the first
Italy,
division.
And he came back a very, very...
Oh, yeah, he was in the first division.
Absolutely
then.
Vicious hand-to-hand fighting with the Italians and Germans.
Yeah, the Italians. Yeah. My first boss was at Monte Cassino.
He was a very damaged man.
Oh, wow. My first boss was an officer at Monte Cassino.
A drunk for the rest of his life. Huh?
Oh, really? Yeah, some men can have it. Some men love fighting, don't they? They love war. Others just... can't cope with it, just drives them nuts. I think it's just depends on your makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of my boss told me, he was an officer during Monte Cassino, and he can remember one day, he said there's these Maori guys, they were in the Maori battalion, he said they were just sitting on the ground with their socks off, just picking their toes. He said it was so funny with their boots and socks off, just trimming, picking their toes, toenails. He said, you know, they're up there, they're some of the bravest, toughest fighters that we had, and it was just a picture, just a sight for sore eyes to see these guys laughing and carrying on, you know. They can handle war, eh? Maoris are really good at war. They're tough. And a friend of mine runs
they're very aggressive people, yeah.
Yeah, and a friend of mine, he ran a karate dojo, and, you know, that for kids, and he used to take these this teams of New Zealand kids up to Japan to compete against the Japanese, and the Japanese loved the Maori kids because he said they were tough. They were just so tough, they could just take a hammering.
Mm.
So yeah, no wonder we struggled mm-hmm. trying to beat them during the land wars. Oh boy!
Well, you know that we did, I don't think we beat them. I think that look. You know, I've researched a bit of this. At the time of the Musket Wars, there were 110,000 Maoris in New Zealand and 2,000 Europeans.
Yeah.
The Maoris were armed to the teeth with muskets. They could have got rid of the Europeans in a day, but they didn't. They fought each other. But go and look it up. At the time of the Treaty of Waitangi, there were only 2,000 Europeans here. Only 2,000. 2,250 or something.
Yeah, but they sent in a lot of troops, though, didn't they, after that? Didn't they send in a lot of troops?
Well, there would have been a few, but they would just been... How many troops are you going to have guarding 2,200 people? They said the total population of Europeans in New Zealand at the time of the treaty, or signing of the Treaty of Waitangi, 2,250.
Wow, that's not much, is it? Well, and they'd all be armed. Dennis, did you get that? They'd all be armed. Every single person that was in this country.
Be armed,
no, but the men would have been armed.
The women wouldn't be armed.
Oh, I bet they knew how to reload a musket.
So, reloading a musket's a pretty slow thing to do, but the Maoris had thousands of muskets that they'd brought back from, you know, the Hongi Hika had gone to Britain with a whole lot of... he was taken there as a celebrity because of his tattoos and that, and the British made a big fuss of him,
yeah.
Gave him a lot of gifts and all that sort of thing because they thought he was so amazing.
Yeah.
And on his way back, he sold them all in Sydney, bought muskets, came back here, taught his men to use them and went to war against his own people. That's what happened. That was called the Musket Wars.
Yep.
And they were getting muskets from other places as well. And so they were armed to the teeth.
So that was Maori on Maori, though, wasn't it? There was no Europeans involved.
Maori on Maori.
Yeah.
It started in 1807 and went on to 1847, 3 years before the Treaty of Waitangi.
Oh, 1837.
The Treaty of Waitangi was started.
Yeah. 1837.
Yeah,
gotcha.
So it signed in 1840.
Yeah.
And the Maoris wanted it more than everybody else because they needed to stop the fighting between their own people. They just did.
Do you think... You
know, so those people weren't stupid.
Do you think that the British were reluctant to come and colonise, put a colony here? Or do you think that they... Because, I mean, they were doing plenty of trading with Maoris. Did they really need to put a colony here? Or do you think that they did it because the Maoris begged them to?
Because the Maoris what?
Begged them to. They were begging. They wanted the treaty more than we did.
Well, clearly they did, because there was a hell of a lot more of them than us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. These are truths that don't get told in New Zealand. We only tell the lies.
Yeah, we do.
So you've got to do is ask the question. Anybody can do it. What's the population of Europeans in New Zealand at 1840? And what's the population of Maori at the same time? And it was 110,000 Maori. And it really was 2,250 whites. So they wouldn't have had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
But the Maori people... I mean, that William Yeats letter, just stick it in Google.
Is it William Yeats or Yeats?
William Yeats letter. And 13 Maori chiefs approached him and asked him to write to the king in their name. And he did. And it was signed. And it is a historical document that exists in New Zealand. And it really was asking the King of England to organise something to save them from the troubles that they might get from English people, but also from the teasing of other tribes, is what it said.
What year was that letter?
We need to be saved from the...
What year was that letter?
Sorry?
What year was that letter authored?
1837.
Well, wouldn't Victoria have been on the throne?
No. King William was on the throne.
Oh, William.
King William was on the throne when they addressed it. I think by the time it got to England... Queen Victoria was on the throne.
I'm with you. Okay, I got you. I'll look that one up.
Because, it was like an eight-month journey sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It took 5.5 months for our lot to come in 1849, my family, Robert Edwards and his wife, Ellen. It took a while. You need to get some sustenance and drink plenty of fluids, because at 6 o'clock you've got the news, and that'll drive you nuts, because you'll have to hear 30 to 60 seconds of Maori before you can even understand anything they're saying.
I'm in bed, and I can close my eyes and shut my ears, and my wife will be home soon. She'll look after everything.
Oh, that's lovely. All right, say g'day to Lily for me. Thank you very much. Dennis Hall, Dennis writes for the New Zealand Centre for Political Research. That's Muriel Newman. Muriel Newman was a former ACT politician, and Dennis Hall's one of the top writers there. It's about time you wrote some more, Dennis. All right, I'll let you get back to...
I've got to be better. I've got to get well first.
Yep, okay. Get well, and then we'll do more of it. Okay, then. Thank you, Dennis. Bye now.